Hello, strangers, and welcome to the Strange Horizons podcast for November 18th, 2019. I'm your host and fearless leader, Anaya Lay. For this week's podcast, we have Seed Vault by Marika Bailey. Marika was born in the Caribbean and raised in Brooklyn. She reps both with equal pride. A writer and illustrator, you can find her online on Twitter as @3yellowplums. Now, settle in. Let's begin. Seed Vault by Marika Bailey. 1. Fire. I should tell you about the god, yes? Good setting for it. Here in the desert, hunger and thirst sharpen the soul. Sharpens it enough to poke right through the side of your mind to let it in a second sight. They hitched rides like barnacles and weeds on the bellies of our soul ships and crossed the dark. Slave ship, starship, no matter to them. Belong is belong, yes? They took root and grew fat in the good red earth. I am surrounded by our gods. To be honest, they are a mama bloody nuisance. He laughs. Daddy Longlegs, Papa Negre. The old man who is a god walks behind me, his body made up of tumbleweeds and shadow. His laughter is the wind rattling through his snake bone ribs. He wears one face now, another next. They are all the people whose blood lies in the fields and whose bones rest in the earth. You going the right way, baby girl? He knows I am. I've been ignoring him for a while now. I know the direction I'm going, if not the reason. I could take out my Mipu to check, but that would be him getting his way, and I'm not in the mood. To hell with him and the rest. Stones around my neck, calling and crying. They do not like the desert. Then go back home, I mutter. They cling harder. There are many gods and few. They mix and reform and come apart like particles of oil and water. They've always been around. In the village, most could only see them as rags of light and sound out of the corner of your eyes. Some never see them at all. Like Mamon. Like me. I had not seen them until that morning I woke up at Titi June's side with smoke-burning tracks of tears from my eyes. Gods fill the edges of my sight with color and sound. I am wearing a halo of gods, a boiling cloud that blooms and stretches into a thin, shimmering thread back to the east and the good red. As much as it worries me, it does not bother Min. Takes a lot to bother a 6-foot-tall Manaku. She plods on, solid and comforting. As we move forward, her tracks are intersected by smooth lines in the sand from the circling bots that I've programmed. They write their passage through the dirt, tireless scouts whistling back to me of the not-so-empty dunes. In the distance, as night fades to dawn, I hear the yup-yi of desert sandbirds and the wah-yu of an owl. The not-sound of the wolf. The heat rises with the stuttering chirp of gem flies. I nudge Min towards the small outcropping of stone and pale brush. Dropping from the saddle, I lead her towards a shaded overhang. Getting her settled in and unburdened by our saddlebags and combed down doesn't take much time, but I can already feel the day's heat by the time I am ready to make my own bedroll in the shade. The gods surrounding me begin to pop like soap bubbles, leaving me alone with Papa Bones and the Yellow Lady. Bones sits to my right, his rag and weed body seeming heavier than it should be. The lady, her hair strewn with coral and her dark skin wet, sits to my right. She has not spoken to me this entire way. She is simply here. Her eyes, when they do meet mine, are golden pools unbroken by pupils. My dinner is roasted breadfruit and dried meat, both from stores rescued from the ruins of the town. It tastes like home, but I finish it, even though it sits uneasily in my stomach. Pain rising up from the smell of white thyme and scallion. I begin to drift asleep as the sun climbs higher, white and burning. The horizon is wavy with heat. The last thing I hear as I fall asleep is bones. "Where are you going?" he asks again. When I try to answer, bones spill out of my mouth. They land on the ground and sprout roots spiraling down, down, down to the heart of the world. I must dig graves, homes for the bones, a resting place for the ancestors. It takes a long time to dig a grave for people. It's full body work. Your arms swing the shovel, your thighs pull, and all the long while your mind, it thinks, it accuses. You at first. You could have done more, yes? Is all your fault. Jump in the grave you are digging. Cover yourself in the earth and die. Gods rise up from the red earth and wrap themselves in an umbilical cord around your neck. I wake to Min's quiet snuffles. Dusk is settling in, and the darkness smudges the desert to make it pretty and almost welcoming. We walk at night. It surprised me that even then the desert is not still. It is an unending chorus of creatures, all trying to survive in their own ways, with tooth and claw, quickness and smarts, or silence. I've made good time since leaving way back, or what was left of it. Titi Jun and the Griot were making progress digging out the ruins when I left. But every time I walked past the gathering house, I could still see it smoking, and the marks of many feet outside the door. Hour on the trail, the sky cracks in half. A sandstorm from the east, fire dancing on the horizon. Min moans with worry, and I hurry us to an outcropping of rock out of the way of our path. We reach the cave in the rock just before the scouring sand passes over where we were standing. I pull Min deeper into the small dark space and set up camp. When I take a chance to peek up at the sky through the narrow cave mouth, I see Orakan dancing along the lightning, his locks streaming dark black against the towers of sand and flame that blast across the desert. Papa Longlegs sits by me, and Min weaving a daisy chain from dead clematis flowers. He finishes and turns to me, offering it. Everywhere I look, I am surrounded by gods. I place the flower chain over my wide-brim hat and laugh at what I must look like. Suit and hat of dark leather, kerchief covering my mouth, and polarized glass goggles to block the storm glare. Dust covers me from the hat to boot. Outside, the booming thunder cracks. Inside, a small trickle of dust falls into Min's face. She sneezes, displacing the crown of flowers on her head, and settles back in for a nap. The storm will go on for at least another 8 hours. The woman in yellow walks out of the storm and into the cave. She shakes sand and leaves from her hair, and in the waving folds of her dress, I see schools of glittering fish. "You and your boyfriend have a fight?" Papa Bones asks her, his death's head grin growing wide in the sunken gray-blue-black of his face. The woman ignores him with a flick of her frothing black hair and settles her skirts around her. Sitting cross-legged by the fire I have built, she reaches her hands out to it. I wonder what she sees when she looks at it. I wonder for the millionth time if I'm imagining them, or if I'm dead. I had never been one to care about our gods. They seemed distant and unimportant in comparison to concrete things like maths and getting out of my mother's house. Gods not seemed like the way that I was going to get to university in Prime City. I'd liked the stories the Griot told about our gods as much as anyone else. Understood their importance in a distant way, like I understood crop rotation, a thing that others take care of which has nothing to do with me. I had never been what Mamalan called a god-botherer. But it seems they are content bothering me. They are not what I expected. More have formed in the sphere of light around the gel fire I've built in between a circle of stones. They argue and jostle until one has the idea to ask Papa for a story. Bones always has a take in him. He has the story of everyone who has ever crossed his ivory threshold. "Here is a true, true story," he begins in his sawdust voice. Griot words for the beginning of the most important stories. When they arrive in a new settlement, sand still fresh in the hems of their robes, the God-chosen story weavers tell the tales of us, the people wreathed by the painted star sky of the gathering houses. They remind us of our history as much as the planted bones of our ancestors remind the earth of our promises. So does our death god begin tonight's story in the traditional way. A true, true story. His voice, the one he chooses, is one of my own maman. There's something they never tell you. Gods are assholes. "In 3128 standard, oh, beloved children of the space where my heart would be if I were more than bones. The Dier Mingawa conglomerate was paid 32 trillion credits to terraform this land. Dier. Or, as it was known then, exoplanet M329. I have heard this story 1,000 times. Every child in every settlement knows it by heart. But Papa has us in the palm of his skeletal hand. Monies were paid, my sweet babies, in what was called a public-private partnership, where a few people paid a lot and many people paid only a little less because they all wanted one thing. To get rid of an inconvenience, mouths and souls yawning wide with hunger. Send them away. Let them sort themselves out. If we cannot see them, we won't feel shame. The gods and I hoot and holler in response. Our part in the retelling. Everyone has a pot, doo-doo. Old Man Bones grins wide, teeth as white as the doorstep to the house his children will never leave. It was not much as planets go, but who wants to give the biggest piece of chicken to the hungriest mouth? The people lived on the sharp cutting edge of maybe enough if the budget passes and the bond approves, we. When they arrived, mon familier shaking the stardust sleep from their eyes, they were met by a home that had failed. There was no paradise for them. There was desert. There was fire unlike anything seen before, even in the blooms of stars. A fire pink as Grey Dog's birth. But it was their world, and they decided to remain. We stomp our feet, the gods and I. Here we stay, punctuating our words, pounding against the ground. You think this is crazy, no? Papa jumps up, reflections of the campfire writhing in his eyes. No, we cry. Fools! What is louder, our roar or the storm outside? What is safety, the people cried. What is home when home is the bottom of a jackboot or the rat-a-tat of death ringing down? What would they go back to live as a dispensable budget line? Fuck you, Mihoj. No. Here they would stay. It was theirs. It is ours. Bones, he laughs, a sound like the first clods of dirt hitting a shroud. Having a good time, he is. He is stalking the little cave in his shiny threadbare suit whose trouser legs don't even cover his ashy ankles. His feet are bare and cracked. But we can't look away, human or god. Spindly arms outstretched, legs spread wide, he spins his tail. What the people wanted became the subject of several years of, what shall we call it, masturbatory litigation. I see Huracan, who has come inside to sit by Yellow Lady, snicker. She rolls her eyes at him. The partnership did not agree with the people's choice. It is hard to put pictures of ruined planet and desperate colonists in brochure material. By the time all of the paperwork was shuffled away, the colonists had been forgotten. And no one bothered to tell them what had been the outcome of the case. It was assumed that the stupid fools had died. We live! We live! Fists raised up, beating against the air. Death dances among us, grinning and spinning. The sandstorm calms enough that we can press on. The polarized goggles and bandana protect my face from the sand, but I can't help flinching in the face of the fierce wind howling in the dark around me. Mama taught me how to survive in the sand, but only to scare me away from having to. This is not the Tier I know. This is what I have been protected from, this darkness. But it is also mine, and also beautiful. Min walks on, carrying her small cargo. Her quiet implacability is like a warmth in my heart. She is a piece of home, and I cling to her, resting behind the large crest of her head. We walk through the night, and mile by mile the storm begins to sleep, or we begin to outpace it. My god riders settle and recede from my sight, even the Storm King. He disappears with a laugh and a smile. The stars come out one by one. It feels like the world is unfolding from underneath the sand winds. Above, I hear the cry of the single riri bird on its lonely crossing, searching. The white dunes spread out towards all edges of the horizon, blooming with distant pink fire as if in answer to the stars above. The bones crying out, "We are here. We are here." If I lean forward into the dense fur on Min's back, if I cover my eyes in her darkness and my nose with her scent, if I feel lonely enough to die here in this graveyard of my ancestors, then there is no one to see me, not even my restless gods. 2. Bones. I don't want to use up all the stores I brought. Gotta hunt on the trail, Mama always said. I have my slingshot. Nothing flashier than that where projectiles are concerned. But I do have my little friends. Magnetic field on Tier is fucked up. Plainest way to say it. Instead of one field, there are many, drifting in currents across the surface. It's the wildlife that follows those, moving along with a wave that only they can feel. I've kept 3 bots back from my dozen. These I've adapted with some half-broken dispellers from smashed den boxes I grabbed before heading out. It's not hard to connect them to the simple guts already in the ceramic constructs. When I'm done, I set 2 of them out on a course my Meepu has plotted. A 3rd is on an oblique course to meet them where they connect with their quarry. A magnetic front is coming. Where it edges up against another field, a sandstorm erupts, blacker than ink on the horizon. In that field will be a body. About as high as your knee, sandy gray-brown fur and snub noses, they follow a field that takes them through the half-blasted prairies where they live off of twisted sand grass tough enough to cut the calloused heel of any oldster. Following along the edge of the flowing herd, 2 of the bots roll through the tall grass and eventually catch 1 sow. I'm back far enough from the herd that I need to set my specs to magnify. But I see the moment they get her alone and send my signal as they do. Whop! They release an electromagnetic pulse that dazzles the body, and she falls to the ground. The 3rd bot, rounding up on her flank, gives her a shock strong enough to stop her heart. Quick clean. Before I can stop myself, I think Maman would have been proud of that kill. The sands recede to smoke. She was dead, along with most everyone I had ever known, and most everything I'd thought was simple and true. Like, why does the sun rise, and why do I breathe? Odd questions with no answers I could easily grasp. Mind memory can paralyze you, but body memory can keep you moving. So it is with the hunt's end. I clean the kill, spare some blood for the earth and the blessed ancestors. I am in a daze. I am packed and set up for the day's rest, meat ready to cure in the sun, when my body can no longer resist the pull of my mind's riptide. The morning after my home burned, it rained. It rained as if it had been waiting, hot air one second and a curtain of water the next. We few left sat huddled in a lean-to by the back of one of the houses, five survivors shivering in darkening ashes. The smoke rose from the guttering flames and mixed with the leaves from the founding tree. From the ember I saw lights rise and curl through the night, bright enough to touch my numbness. Titi saw me and took my hand. We walked silently towards the tree that was the oldest part of the village, to the ash and flickering embers at its feet. She squeezed my hand hard then. Hard. Her face trembled and I couldn't look at her. Not at my Titi, she cried. Like seeing a mountain cry or a wave sob. That was what it was like. And she held me fast, sitting under the elder tree. Shoulder to shoulder, we cried and shook until it was dark and the stars were reflected in the tracks of our tears. I cried so much I fell asleep. Woke up with my head in her broad and soft lap. She stroked my hair, Titi, like I was still a baby. She must have felt me come awake because she began, "Tierre is the home we have made, with each other and with the land. A contresong, our elders called it. Dadu. There are promises between we, Monsang, and she, Tierre. Promises. Contracts need to be bound. When we promise each other to behave, we are bound by the law. Our promises with the earth, Minsang, is bound by the Dusi." "Like Le Rhin Azuli?" I asked as Titi began to replait the unraveling ends of my braids. I felt soft and dreaming, tired. My eyes so wrung dry they hurt. "Oui, comme elle. The gods of our exodus, Old Man Bones, the Sea Witch, Huracan, the 100,000. With each name she called, I felt a warmth in my bones. I floated between her broad hands and the smell of smoke. She pointed unshakingly to the light we both saw. "Those threads are their tracks. They bind us and our souls to the earth, and she to us." "And why can I see them now?" I asked. "I don't know." Rescue came out of a sandstorm darkness. A caravan of 40-plus people. By then, we had uncovered and cleaned out a still-standing home and were living almost like people again. If people sometimes sat down on the floor and cried and cried. Titi Jian had found an unspoiled cache of village supplies. We were still alone together, but our bellies were full and we were warm. Petit Ange had even found some goats that had wandered loose and gotten lost in the canyon and led them back to the village, her chubby little face beaming. It was only afternoon, but the sky had fallen dark with a sandstorm on the desert horizon. The babies were playing with a teacher hollow I'd rescued from a debris pile and cleaned up for them. It still worked fine, and Titi did not think that even the destruction of everything we'd once known was a good reason to stop lessons. "A little boring and normal would be good for them to do," she said, and I did not want to argue with her about it. Ma Sing and Titi were bent over their hand looms. The microcircuitry in both had been damaged, but they were hopeful they could be repaired. Us five survivors of a settlement of hundreds. I stood outside their circle, my mipu in one hand, staring out at the storm. So I was the first to notice the perimeter bot alarm. It whirred back to me, lights whirring inside its round clay body and kicking up red dust in its path. Titi saw it and jumped up, pulling the babies into another room. Ma Sing went to the cupboard where her machete was stored. My knife was at my side always now. We had not found any of the village's guns in our excavations. I turned our few lights off via my mipu connection and waited in the shadow of the door, my eyes focused outside. The perimeter bots followed the motion, silent and dark. There was a flash of lightning over the horizon and a boom like a man's laughter. The drums of Huracan. I thought at first it was a haze on my eyes after the lightning, but no. Growing larger was a light in the whirling sand-burned darkness. In that light moved ribbons of color, like the god threads around the meeting house.
I moved without thinking. Ma Sing grabbed my hand. In the dark, I could just make out the reflection of the stormlight in her brown eyes. Children don't go into danger. I pulled away from her and went, chest burning. I held my knife close to me in the dark, tasting salt and sand in the air, and moved into the street. The light grew closer and closer, and with it came sound. A sound like the booming of a mother's belly from the inside. A sound like the twanging of a heartstring. The light blossomed into the dark, and inside of it was a form. A person, skin dark and sand-blasted ashy, holding a staff into the sky. At the top of the staff, a light like a star in the vastness of the Dusi's heaven. A griot. We people have a word for the cracked earth. We call it desolation. It is not just unwelcoming land. It has been heartbroken. Not empty, though. There was always the fire booming in the distance. The wind snarled and nodded with lightning-laced sandstorms. And quieter things. Colonies of brown-white bush foxes. Desert brack figs clustered around salt pools, home to flocks of red-eyed birds that live off the sour fruit and spread the seeds as they follow the wind. On seventh days, we sang lullabies to the earth, Tier, the broken-hearted. In the desert, tracking ghosts, I find myself beginning to sing them, too. I sing a song the griot taught me. They said it was a song my father had written long ago, when he was barely more than a boy and saw stars shining in my mother's hair as if she were Ren Azuli in the flesh, before they married, before they had me. Before he was lost to the sands, his bones anchoring some part of the desolation where no one has yet found him. Griot gifts are strange things. They are silk knots tangled through golden rings. By God's grace, Jones, that was their name. The red walker who came to the pyre that had been the town called Wayback. I have been on my own for nearly 2 weeks now, traveling east, following the tracks picked up by my rolling scouts. I don't know how long I will go until I find what I'm looking for, but I can't go back until I do. The desert rain has lulled me, and I sleep all the way through the daylight hours. It was only when the light recedes and the temperature of the desolation plummets that I awaken. Min has gathered close to me, her large, musky bulk keeping me warm. Around us there are ice crystals on the gray earth, gilding the parched shrub grass. It does not get this cold in the village. Our air and earth are protected by the foundling guardian line that rings every settlement. So we do not have the same extremes on the red as there is in the desolation. That last morning I left the house early, before Mama woke. Sometimes it felt like she only ever slept when I did. Passing the small garden where Dashin and Edo burst happily from the rich soil, I went out to the borders of the red. Riding my Manaku, Min, it was a few minutes from the house to where the staggered boundary of stone ancestors marked the end of the red and the beginning of the desolation. I had heard that the larger settlements had multiple rings of boundaries, pushing back against the gray sands. But we were a young town and had just the one. Being out, I never wanted to turn back. It was the fire on the horizon that brought me out of my small room and smaller bed. The sands, gray, white, and black, flowed in an amber dance as far as the eye could see, as tidal as the broken piebald seas. This time, I had a good 10 minutes watching the sand devils chase each other under the still-rising sun before my Mipu chirped. I didn't need to look at the message to know what it was. Mama waited for me in the doorway, her face calm as she watched me slink back to the house. She did not move aside as I walked in, and though I'm only a few inches taller than her, it felt like standing in the shadow of a sparker, a real desert-churning storm. She said nothing as I sat down at the kitchen table and ate the porridge she'd made. Didn't look my way when I picked up my stylus for classes. It was as I headed back through the sandblasted lintel of our front door that she spoke for the first time that day. "The only one you're going to hurt is yourself." Her face, known as well as the moons in the sky, fades to black until it is Papa's wizened grin. His mouth opens in a long cackle. I shake myself out of my sluggishness, shivering and cursing my numb fingers, and it is time for Min and I to walk again. I find the downed track car 2 hours later, stuck in a raw spinny, the air filled with magenta fire. "There are places like these all over Thiers," Jones says. "Where in most of Thiers, the failed terraform left behind wasteland, the raw were places where the earth had simply remained in flux. The land shifts away from your eyes. You find that where your feet land is not where you set them. Grasses change color and explode with multicolored spores that wing away like purple butterflies. Emerald nettyhoppers jump from grass to rock to tree, changing colors as they move, looking like colored paper floating on the wind. I leave Min a little back from the raw. When the wind shifts and blows in from the spinny, she sneezes and turns away. I pull the red bandana around my throat up to cover my nose and mouth and the broad leather hat on my head down, keeping the raw away from as much of my face as possible. Much good may it do me now. I wade into the grass. It starts out low and stubby, and it thickens and grows tall past my waist the closer I get to the center. The sticky seeds pull at the cloth of my shirt and muffle the sound of my spurs. So it takes me a few minutes to find the bones. "Good evening," I call out to them when I see their broken ivory peeking out from the red ground. It's a good thing I brought gloves with me. Some part of my brain had listened to Jones when they spoke. I put them on, but even through their tough manicou leather, the bones still feel hot like fire. I pull them out from the earth, two long thigh bones white as lightning. They hum and crackle. I place them gently in the grass and begin to dig and talk. Griot Jones taught me how to bury our dead. They showed up at my titi's door 2 days after the caravan of rescuers arrived in the storm-shrouded night. Tall and gangly, skin as dark brown as the carved stave they carried. Walked me over to the gathering house whose stones no longer smoked. But it burned in my mind's eye. Brighter than the sun, almost, I raised my arms to block my eyes. But I could feel the light. Joan held my hands as we walked into the charnel house dark and towards the bones of way back. Hundreds of them. "Come," they said. "Our people need us." I knelt before one broken body, stomach and heart roiling, ready to bolt and throw up everything I'd ever even thought about eating. They held my shoulder firmly, feeling I was ready to run. I breathed in, and when I exhaled, I could see the gods' thousand faces, a mix of expectation and fury and what I could only hope was love. Ready for their children. I talked to the bones about all sorts of things. "We are having good rains this spring, Elder." The red earth parts for me smoothly, as if it has been waiting for me and the blade of my shovel. Willing to be opened. "The cacao are growing dark. The crop will be great this year, and we will have more than enough to trade for a new ansible. The cacao will rot in the fields when there is no one left to pick them. The ansible tower is gone." When I had made a hole wide enough and deep enough for the bones, I lower them in gently. The heat inside them pulses like the flow of blood, and it is all I can do to not drop them. "I am your descendant. Please don't hurt me." As if that would be enough. As I cover the ancestor over with earth, I see their spirit rise up as a ribbon of light that spools around itself like golden thread.
It floats among the divine colors of the gods who reach out for it, but it is the soul that chooses. The soul flutters gently over to a god I have no name for. His eyes are black pools that match his skin, and his hair is whiter than bone. He wears nothing but a veil of flowers. The soul moves to him, so close it looks as if it kisses the top of his wide nose. The god gathers them in their arms, and in a burst of light, dives toward the waiting earth. The soil underneath my feet shudders and bucks. It ripples like a pond disturbed, and then like a boiling river. Underneath the movement, the earth changes. The soil is as red as is my home village, the grass as thick and green. This abundance flows out from the spot where I stand, a crashing wave of soul stuff and redemption. Where the raw was before, only a few yards wide in any direction, I can see it has begun its creep further. The land has a new foothold in the desolation, but my job here is not done. The car is waiting. This is an easy job. A kid could do it. My Meepu could run a prog on it practically on auto. But I do it the manual way for the practice. We used to try to crack the code wall around the Ansible Tower all the time, us kids. Hack a bot and replicate exponentially shifting patterns. That takes work. None of us ever beat John John the Ansible Man, but I come close sometimes, eh? Mama used to say that she did not like it. The law is for all of we. But who was the one who bought the glass chips to upgrade my Meepu, eh? My chest hurts the way the bones hurt. Like fire. Maybe I cry as I back into the car's old board. Maybe not. No one here is going to tell you but the sand and the earth, and they are both mine. When I am done, I know where the car has been. The sound of the rustling grass is the sound of gods laughing.
Soon, come.
The time in the spinny has gotten me turned around. I whistled to call over a bot to check the direction. These are not more than toys, really. Our major constructs, the works of the Ansible Tower, was in the net connected way back. And that is gone unless Auntie can fix the tower or find new engineers. I turned towards the path behind me, wondering if I should have stayed. The wind changes. My hair smells like smoke and blood. Gods will drive you with whips made of your own memories. It's been days since the craft was abandoned. On foot or pack beasts, they'll be slower. I can catch up with them if I push. I feel the shadow of Papa's gaze on me. The shadow where his eyes should be reveal a glint of white, like stars strung along an event horizon. If I don't push, I'll be driven. He laughs, a sound like the wings of carrion birds slashing against the air. 3. Blood. Blood for the earth. Blood for the tree. Blood for the carrion birds. Ree, ree, ree. Rock, sear grass, eyes blinking shyly from under cover of leaf and mound, claws pulsing in, out, to the beat of an unaware heart, fire, winds that propel shards of glass instead of water, the desolation, unforgiving but not empty, has its own rhythm, as much as the village did. I have slowly learned it, night after night. So it is with a sharp shock when I become aware that something has broken it. There is the sound of another person. Not the rumble or tolling of God voice, but something so much smaller. A sad, broken voice calling out for help. I send the botnet out to track whatever was making the noise and follow them into the slowly rising horizon. A few minutes later, I kneel down in front of a broken body. They look up at me, eyes clouded with pain, and begin to cry. The yellow lady sits behind him, almost cradling his head in her lap, and her eyes fill with salt water. In the distance, I hear Hurakan's drums echoing from a passing storm.
The boy is skinny, but not light. I have to drag him up onto the litter I whacked together out of some extra tent zipper stop and lashed the rings embroidered in the back of Min's saddle. He screams when I lift him up, but then falls unconscious from the pain. Better for both of us. By the time I get us into some cover in the closest oasis, the sun is rising high into the sky and I feel like I'm being baked into my kit. It's not much more than a rock overhang surrounded by a few struggling trees, but it feels like heaven when I can lay the boy down in shade and set myself and Min to rights. I don't have much more than the basic med kit with me, and nothing like this kid has probably ever seen before. I wipe the burns on his face and torso with Kakol and follow up with a layer of bush honey and slap two of my algae gel packs on his chest. The Jiba poison in the gel acts as a stimulant. Will pull him out of shock. There's not a damn thing I can do about his broken leg. He might live or not. I've done everything I can to tip his luck over onto the side of not dying, knowing that Papa is following my every move. I stare and stare at his broken body. Maybe a few years younger than me, not a man full grown. He is skinny and has lost enough blood to turn his already pale skin the color of fish guts.
You know who he is, Papa says. You know what he is.
I do, and how could I not? I wasn't in this soul-blasted desert for no reason. What did you come out here to do? Why you think we followed you, girl? I never asked you to follow me, I spit back. Papa glares at me, a look that rips through my skin and heart and right down to my quivering guilt. You are here for the people, says he. None of the other gods have stayed for this, whispering off to wherever they go when they aren't being amused by me. So no one is here to contradict him. And I'm not sure they even would. The threshold god is an eldest among elders. As I watch, a thin silver string of light rises up from the sleeping boy's chest. Longlegs wraps it around one bone finger, drawing it up like thread against a spindle. But he does not snap the thread. Instead, he gets up and walks out of the shade and disappears like mist. I feed Min. Eat something myself, and I can't keep my eyes off the boy. He doesn't die. He has freckles, like Miss Auberville, who made nut cakes every gathering day. Her grandmother's recipe. I'd seen her soul rise from the burned ground where she died. And now this boy. I am fighting with myself. Fitting, seeing as how this all began with a long-ass fight. Is we is or is we ain't people? At first, this was not much of a fight. The other people, after all, stole us. Not much talking there. But afterwards, after the first war for we, the question was asked. It kept being asked. 1,000 years later, we came to Tyr, and that, we said, was that. We wanted, at long last, to be left alone. And we couldn't even have that, could we? The gray dogs arrived. That is what we call you, I say to the boy who cannot hear me, because I am mad in all permutations of the word. He's sleeping. His bleeding has stopped and he is breathing. Good signs. But he is still pale as fish guts. The freckles across his face stand out in stark relief. I know nothing about him or his people. It is not so much that the people hate them. It is that we see in them another link in the chains that were made for us. So we mostly stay away except for some small trade. There are talks of outside mediation. Mother's blood. The Holovids don't say much about them. The odd short documentary. But I know more about the foxes that hide in the desert oases than I do about this other human being. Who are their gods? Do they even have them? I don't know. We are not taught much about the Grey. They live far to the west of our settlements. Habitations cum township they call New Home, thrown up around a spot of their landing 2 decades ago. Pretty shit showing for it.
I can see his bones nearly as well as I can see Death's. His eyes open and he's staring right back at me. Weak as shit tea, but nerve enough to look me dead ass in the eye.
"Are you going to kill me?" he asks in garbled emigre.
"Probably not," I offer. He nods, although he must be working hard to understand me. It has been some time for us people, and languages evolve almost as quickly as hatreds.
"Where are your little friends?"
His eyes narrow, like the sound before a lie.
"Trade?" he asks.
I laugh. "You're dying, Mihoj, but sure."
"How do you do it?" he asks, licking his cracked and bloody lips. "How do you make the earth do what you want?"
"What?"
"You fix the ground."
"How?" "The earth around New Home, their patch of Tier, will be as gray dust and barren to them as the surface of an asteroid. They are not us. And I have confirmation of what I have feared all along in the spirits I did not see rise out of the grave of the Gathering House."
"You people really are evil as well as greedy."
"My sister died because we didn't have enough food for her," he says around fresh tears. "My mother cried herself to death. Do you have a mother?"
Rage brings me nose to nose with him, this audacious child. "I did have a mother. You killed her."
The hands of his gods must close his throat for him. Blessed be their mercy. The boy chokes on his tears and turns away. Eventually, he falls back into sleep. When he wakes up, I will have questions for him.
"They said we was only going to trade."
I can hear the boys whine as I trudge further into the desert and close, so close to my quarry. Who goes to trade with 12 men, armed with near-obsolete starship cutters? Who goes to trade with empty pockets and sacks? Who goes to trade and comes back with bloody butcher's knives? These men, once 12, now 5, did. 6 lay their own bloody bones in way back, and 1 is a boy wounded and feverish on the edge of his own death, but left behind all the same. I have come for the others, and the ragged bags they carry behind them. The bags look like ag surplus, normally strong enough to haul anything you want. But this cargo don't want to be carried. They're down their car and half their friends, and now it seems they're about to lose one of the pack animals they brought from off-world when they landed. Well, I assume that's what they're yelling at each other about. The big, long-necked plotter is lying on the ground, stunned. Its heart is stopping, poor thing. I didn't give them a chance to do more than yell. They dropped as surely as the pack beast. Electric charges leaping from the swirling drones surrounding us all, herding them in a close circle with me at the center. They cursed and spat and vomited on the sandstorm-rippled ground as I stared them down. Tired and wasted as the boy, eyes dark with surprise or hate or confusion. As if it mattered to me. One stayed conscious long enough to spit at me.
"Fucking animals!"
He fumbled for the blast gun across his chest, even got it aimed up at me before it, too, sparked and died. Tier eats up off-world tech and then off-world blood and bone. They must have found an old sealed stash from landing, decided to come to our side of the desolation to take what they wanted. I walk past the stupid man still scrambling for something, anything to stop me with. Their haul sacks have spilled out onto the dust, ripped open by their fall or by providence. What was inside is bloody red and bone white against the sand, and pulsing like a lighthouse. Man familie. A click behind me makes me turn. The last man is standing, teeth gritted and bloody, but standing still. Drones must have been low on juice, or maybe he has a heart like a sand courser. Point is, he has the barrel of a gun pointed straight at me. It's quivering, but his voice is steady enough when he asks me,
Why are you fucking people so hard to kill?
In the rising storm, I hear the sound of clinking bones in the wind.
It shouldn't have taken so many of us to take one stupid village.
There is blood dripping from his mouth, but that gun is steady, steady.
We're at landing, fucking starving, and you freaks are just sitting pretty. No real walls, no army, but you got food, and you got land that doesn't fucking turn everything to dust.
Doesn't seem fair. Doesn't seem right. You in trouble, baby girl?
We paid good money to come here, and the fucking planet is half dead.
He cocks one wild eye at me, as if I personally salted the planet in anticipation of him and his.
Except what you got. Somehow, you all got the good stuff.
I see. And you know how. He laughs, manic, full of teeth and pain.
Oh, yes. Got one of your traveling men. He told us. Squealed.
Y'all, this boy a few rows short of a field. I ignore my god. I only see the gun. Can only see the gun. I've seen it almost every day of my life. Sitting on my maman's hip. A lawman's piece. Coded to her hand, it can only be shot by her. He has my maman's gun. So. I slash my knife down the length of my arm and pull myself into the pulse of bones spilling behind me as my blood rushes to meet them. Reality breaks open as the ground shudders up and swallows us all.
Gods are memory. Blood is memory. The earth remembers all. I am Thier and myself. We are the restless chain of gods and the robbers of bones. Us, we witness the end of the world. Death comes from without, hovering above. 5 grams of heterotrichlorodophane sulfodamate injected into a self-replicating carbon-nitrogen matrix. We learned the formula in sixth form. The matrix is placed within a caged hydrogen reaction and encapsulated in a thin film of imaginary numbers and dropped into my atmosphere. It burns. It burns worse than anything they have ever felt. In real space, it is the size of a child's fist. In the plane of history, it is a long chain dangling back into the irrigated lanes of abandoned forests left bare by plague. It is a harbinger of ships with white masts at the horizon. It is the weight of a boot and sharp shunk of a bayonet into flesh. This is the first half. I know what comes next. Please, please, no. Let me go. Let me go. What is this strange intruder? This is no rock and ice traveler to break apart in my air and kiss my surface. What is this? Terraforming. Copyrighted by the Ingberenweiss Multigalactic Corporation, 200 Earth Standard Years. I'm sorry, I'm so, so sorry. A crimson pearl wrapped in a shimmering call of fire that separates its dimensions from ours and from every living thing it touches until the reactions at its core runs itself dry. It pierces through the lower atmosphere, where it explodes.
Your world, your way. We build a better planet. The quicker planet fixer-upper. It wasn't supposed to be like this.
From the ground, the world ends with a slash, a stab, a shiv. The capsule was preceded some days ago by a sonic drill. Alloy, organic material, nothing to worry about? It is a machine, now mass-produced by a subsidiary of the Deer Company, around the size of a tall human. It is heavy, core heavy, which is perfectly fine as it is meant to go down.
I said stop! I want to get...
As the red pearl sizzles and burns its way through air, the drill begins to dig. It is a broken bone, rotting teeth shattered at the gum bloody pain.
What are you doing?
It is in me, in me, in me, in me! There is within and without.
How has this gotten here?
Core belly fire, heart soul stuff, star sparked. Kill it. Kill it everything until the pain stops.
No.
It is here that the drill turns into a bomb, letting off a combination thermal and electromagnetic pulse that disrupts the magnetic field of the planet. Fuck! The plates of the Earth buckle up, releasing fire. The pearl touches Earth. Its thin veil of containment shimmers and disappears, and it, too, explodes. Like the spores of a ripe fungus, the air is seeded with millions of matrices, painting the sky pink as if with millions of flowers. The air is bent with thunder, and it begins to rain a mixture so toxic that it rearranges the very strands of matter it touches. An Eden, 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 Eden for everyone! This process is called endometrial geodestabilization. The Earth sheds its deepest skin and is reformed according to the designer's instructions. That is what had always happened before. No, 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 never! This time, the Earth fought back. And when we, the people, arrived in our sleep ships, it was to a geological toxic waste disaster. The soul of the planet was dying, and with it, the soul and the air and the water. And soon after, we died too, with our lungs clogged by gray ash and desert sand and bellies hungry and empty as the space where the Earth's center used to be. But you know what happened next, little thief, little sneak. Someone has told you. Or perhaps you persuaded them in your gray, doggish ways, eh? Do you have their bones, too? There was someone. At first, I could not hear. But she called me over and over, and oh, the voice was many voices. I had never heard such a thing in all my dreamings. Grandmother Latasha, may her memory last as long as the people. The engineer of souls bridged the gap at the heart of the world with the ropes of our DNA. Adaptation, translation, billions of constructs rewriting our base code. Blood and bone. Where you sleep, I will sleep. Where you go, I will go. Whatever you become, I will become with you. You promised. Where we were buried, where our blood falls and is consecrated, Thiers is reborn. You will not steal us. The morning the gray dogs came to Wayback to raid, I was already out of the house. Farther than I'd ever gone before, staring at a horizon that I thought was my only hope for a future. I spent most my days, it seemed, being eaten up by a fox named Far from here. So I left the little house as far as I could get, to get a little touch of what I fiended for. So I wasn't where Mama expected me to be. She couldn't find me at all. I tried to be a good girl, and could not. She tried to find me, and died. I look up at the souls released around me and think, me too. Please take me too. I feel myself begin to unspool from the spindle of my bones, unraveling towards a light like Mama. Something tugs me, pulls me back to my body, shivering, to stare as the spirits of my people are given to the Earth by their gods. Until I'm surrounded by silence and new fertile Earth, and completely alone, again with my dead. Girl, is that why you thought we come with you? To send your soul to the Earth? I thought you were mad at me? I pull up my specs, pawing away tears that fog up the glass and blur the light. When I manage to look up at Longlegs, he is grinning at me. That is the joy of being a parent, Dudo. An infinite capacity to be angry and love you at the same time. 4. Seed. I send the boy back to New Home on the surviving plotter. After the new Earth rose, there was one left, happily chewing the crisp newborn prairie grass. He was quiet, looking me over, still too skinny and too pale, huddled under an extra saddle blanket.
"What are you all going to do?" he asked.
I knew he was talking about the people and what his friends had done to us. His face was pinched with worry. I adjusted the buckles on his saddlebags. No use me sending him out into the desert to die after fixing him up. But it was a good question. "What would your people do if it had been us come killing?" I asked back. He turned away, as was his habit. I finished loading up the pack beast. I set a drone to roll along with it as a guide until it was near enough to home to make it the rest of the way itself. As the beast began its plod away, the kid turned back to me, face shaded by cloth wrapped around his head to keep out the sand and dust.
"I'm sorry," he yells from the back of the beast, not quite strong enough to find my eyes when he says it.
I watched him leave and then saddled up Min to go to the opposite direction, back home. The moon rises higher in the sky, lengthening our shadows across the sand. Mine, Min's, and Papa Bone's.
"You going the right way, baby girl?"
"I hope so."
Welcome back. There's nothing like a short, simple, straightforward story that you can just bang out in a couple hundred words. And this was nothing like a short, simple, straightforward story banged out in 100 words. Oh my thousand gods, were there layers here. And the world building is phenomenal. I love the connections about home and loss and recovery and reclamation and all of it tied together with this sort of coming-of-age story as our protagonist finds her way on this world that is finding its own way. There is so much here that if you don't go back and re-listen to the podcast, I hope you at least go to the website and read through the text. There's a lot in here that you probably do need to see the text in order to catch. And when you've done that, let me know what caught you about this story. I am always happy to chat fiction on Twitter, or you can drop me an email, or just make sure I know where it is that you're doing your talking so I can dive in. And while you're out there in the web, make sure you check out the rest of this week's content. We've got some goodies lined up for you, and you're not going to want to miss it. One last note before you go. Strange Horizons is an entirely volunteer organization, supported by donations from our fans and community. If you would like to support us, check out the donate link on the website. That's all for this week. Until next time, stay strange.